This is a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk.
Number 307.
You're listening to the RAB TGO Challenge. Part 5.
The 2010 event was blessed with incredibly fine weather as the 300 or so participants made their way during the month of May from the west to the east coast of Scotland. For those not familiar with this event, it is one which is totally unique in that it isn't a race or a competition. Its sole objective is the same now as it was over 30 years ago when it first started, to foster good fellowship amongst walkers within the framework of a challenging 200-mile expedition. And that is about it. You can approach the trip in any way you like. There are those who carry everything and travel through remote high areas, not meeting others at all, and walkers who use local bed and breakfasts and hostels and keep to well-trodden, easy paths. Most people do something in between and make it as easy or as hard as they personally wish. Routes are submitted and vetted for safety purposes and suggestions, and a small team in control track people as they amble their way, making sure rescue and advice is always at hand should it ever be required. I have had the unenviable task of editing the audio material gathered en route by Andy Howell and Shirley Worrell this year. Sadly, Rose and I didn't make it this time, and I hope I've compiled the material I do have in a way which is entertaining and informative. As you listen to this, it is worth keeping in mind that Andy enjoys a lightweight approach to his walking, and Shirley is, well, torn between stories of ghosts in haunted bodies and the finest of local foods. So her route was anything but direct to incorporate those interests. Walkers start on the west anywhere between Torridon and Ardrishaig and aim to finish somewhere between Arbroath and Fraserburgh on the east coast. Andy started at Dorney, while Shirley set out from Oban. They both recorded a wide range of interviews with people they met along the way, some of whom I have names for, and others I have yet to work out. However, by the time these podcasts are released, I'm hoping the show notes will contain all the missing details. So here we go. Let's just let the story naturally unfold as told by Andy and Shirley and those they meet on the RAB TGO Challenge 2010.
Elsewhere, there are going to be areas of mist and low cloud lifting, and it will be a bright and very warm day with some good spells of sunshine. This afternoon, a few of the heavy thundery showers will develop, especially across inland parts of the northeast, where localised torrential downpours may cause flooding. Temperatures today will generally rise to between 21 and 24 Celsius, that's between 70 and 75 Fahrenheit in the Old Money, though nearer 14 Celsius and 57 Fahrenheit in Shetland and the Western Isles.
Good morning, everybody. It's 7:30 and I'm back in Rhyther and Bothy. Had quite a good night. Lay in bed reading for, two and a half hours, something like that, and listening to the birds outside. There have been cuckoos all the way on the challenge this year. I didn't hear many last year, but this year they've been evident every single day right from the start. And as I was reading in the tent, in the 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, that kind of time, I could hear one coming closer until all of a sudden it was clear that it was very close indeed. And I've only really heard them give a couple of cries or two or three cries and then a pause and then they go on. But this one cried continuously or called continuously for over 2 minutes. I recorded a little bit on the cunning device. And then after that, I crept out of the tent very quietly, hoping that I might be able to get a photograph of it, because it seemed clear to me that it was sitting on the bothy somewhere, and my tent is only about 12 feet from the bothy. So I sneaked round the back, camera poised, finger at the ready, and just as I rounded the left-hand side of it, the one that faces over towards, well, Ben McDewey and Strathnethy, the bird saw me and dashed away, so I did take a photograph, but I don't think it's come out very clearly, if at all. Anyway, I'm quite sure I've never been that close to a cuckoo. In addition to that, later on, I heard grouse making that peculiar noise that that they make. Sounds a bit like a sheep on a low battery. I first heard it at Gorton Bothy, but I was reliably informed by Bill on that occasion that it is a grouse, and I assume it's the grouse lekking, since I've heard that grouse do lots of lekking around Rhyvern Bothy, apparently so enthusiastically at times that they've managed to disturb people's sleep. They didn't disturb me at all, though. They weren't particularly loud, so maybe they're sort of early in the lekking season. Anyhow, I noticed that there is an RSPB sign on the door, and you can see why, because there's all sorts of bird life going on here. So eventually fell asleep, I suppose, at about 11, after having made serious inroads into my book. And as I say, or I think I said, slept until about a quarter to five. And I could have turned over and gone back to sleep, but I didn't really feel sleepy anymore, so I thought I might as well wake up. So I did, and I got out the stove and made myself some hot chocolate and continued with my book. I'd like to have finished the book by the time I get to Braemar so that I can get a new one at Braemar Mountain Sports, because if I don't do that, then almost inevitably, as soon as I've left Braemar, I'll finish this one, and then I won't have something to read in the tent. And I'd rather not be carrying two. So I did that, and whiled away the morning very peacefully. It was actually a few pinpricks of rain on the outer of the tent that woke me up. And my first thought was, oh no, the weather's turned again, just as I'm hoping to attempt to get up onto the tops. But no, I was quite lucky. It was just a little passing shower. And the morning was already quite pleasant, and it's become more and more beautiful as time has gone on. And it's actually, well, almost sunny out there now. I'm a little surprised that there was nobody else along, because I think that on this night last year, that's to say the night that I was at Corora Bothy, there were quite a few people at Rhyvern. I'm pretty sure I remember David Alban telling me that he was here with some others, and that it was that night. Anyway, I suppose these things vary according to the year. So I've been looking on the map, and I think that my plan remains to walk up the Strathnethy, can hardly say that, and get up to Loch Arn, and then turn right along the southern edge of Loch Arn, rounded at the top, somewhere near the Shelterstone, which I haven't seen, but which is shown on the map, and then head up the side steeply towards Loch Etchican. And from there, assuming that the weather is still good, I think, well, if the weather's perfect, I'll take my pack, because I'd love to sleep on Ben McDewey. But if, as seems likely, Loch Etchican or the Hutchison Memorial Hut seem to be a more attractive option, then I suppose I'll leave my pack there and make my way up to the top. The door's creaking just now. I wondered whether somebody was coming in, but they're not, so I'll assume that that's wind and not a ghost. All right, so can't really think of anything else to say. I've run short, I think I mentioned yesterday, on lunch supplies. That was a bit of an oversight. I should have stocked up on something when I got to Dalwhinnie, but I just completely forgot about it. So I've got a bit of gorp, basically, in a bag. I've just had a couple of handfuls for breakfast, but that was fine because I don't normally eat any breakfast at all. And I'll have some of that for lunch, and as long as my gas holds out, I'll have some more of the Thai curry for dinner. That beef stew last night was absolutely delicious. I'm really pleased with it, but I don't look forward to the prospect of eating more Thai curry with quite so much enthusiasm. And it looks from a scan at the map as though the journey tomorrow from, let's assume I stay at Loch Etchican, down to Braemar should take no more, or no longer, perhaps a little less time than the journey from Corora Bothy took to Braemar when I camped at Corora Bothy last year. So I suppose that if I press on, well, I can't remember how long it took now. Was it about 3 hours, or possibly it was four? Anyway, it seems that it should be possible to get there without too much effort by late morning, thus leaving myself plenty of time to go into the cafe and have egg and chips, my favoured breakfast, and a big mug of tea, and then go and book in at the bunkhouse. I'm at Rucksacks, and collect my parcel, I hope, and then get some kind of parcel together to send home, and then it'll be over to the Fife Arms. In fact, that might come a little bit sooner. That might come before Rucksacks, but I have a look in the Fife Arms, see who's there, and hopefully meet up with some old friends. All right, well, enough waffling from me for now. I hope that I will run into some other people during the course of the day. It's so beautiful this morning that I'm sure that unless the weather changes very significantly, there will be other people on top. So from me until I chat to you at some stage later during the morning, it's goodbye for now. Well, it's 11:10, and I'm sitting in fabulous weather, about 50 metres from the foot of Bannock Moor. Having left Rhyvern Bothy this morning, just after 9 o'clock, I walked up to the footbridge near the site of the former Bannock stables, and meant to take the path that leads the Strath Nethy path. But although I looked for it, I didn't see it. I thought I'd taken it, but in fact I accidentally took the path that leads round the east side of Bannock Moor towards the Fords of Arne, and I realised I'd gone wrong part of the way up when a couple of cyclists came up behind, and I checked the position with them, and that's what they said. Anyway, they were good enough to say that they hadn't been able to see it on the ground either, and neither in fact had Ron Reynolds, who I saw a little further up the path. So anyway, I thought, well, not to worry. I was actually relieved to have made the mistake, because this is such a beautiful path. The other one was right down in the, right down next to the river, and it would have been very boggy, and I wouldn't have been getting the fantastic scenery. So I was happy enough to take it, but then it seems I made a second glitch when I took a path that's led me to the foot of Bannock Moor, rather than taking the path that skirts around the edge of it. So anyway, not to worry. I know where I am. So it's only, I would say, probably half a kilometre if I walk in an easterly sort of direction. About half a k away from here is the path that leads around the edge, and I might take that, or you never know. I mean, it looks lovely up there. I don't know when I'll ever get another opportunity to be here in weather like this. So since the weather's great and it's still only early in the day, perhaps I will go over Bannock Moor and then take the path down. I hope it will be third time lucky, and I will actually get to take the path that will lead me down to Loch Arne. So I'm sure there must be lots of other challenges in the area. I spoke to Alvar at Challenge Control earlier on, and he told me that there were people around. But I haven't seen any other challenges today, just Ron Reynolds, with whom I camped, of course, at Rhyvern Bothy last night, and the two mountain bikers who've now gone off somewhere. So I hope that I'll see some people later on. And I'm just going to play it by ear when I get up to see where I might camp. There's all sorts of options at the moment. Okay, so for now, from me, it's goodbye. Well, good evening, listeners. Here I am in the Hutchison Memorial Hut, thank goodness. When I last recorded something, I was on my way from Loch Arne up to Loch Etchachan, and it was the most frightening experience I've ever had on the challenge, with the lightning and the thunder and the hailstones, the constant hailstones, and then the navigational challenges, and standing at Loch Arne thinking, please God, don't let me take the wrong path down. I checked it with every conceivable navigational aid that I had, and happily managed to get the right one, and I did get down to the hut. And as I got here, it all looked sort of quiet and empty, and I was a bit sorry about that, because I'd hoped that there would be somebody here. But by a miracle almost, Caban was here, which was marvellous. And we've been sitting here drinking tea, and we've both eaten. Anyway, Caban has agreed to say a few words for the benefit of those who are listening. So, good evening, Caban.
Hello. Yes, it hasn't all been such a bad day today, actually. I've had a lovely day walking in the snow all day.
Go on, then, tell us all about it.
It's camped down in Larry Grew in the middle bit, and then walked up Lurch's Crag to Cairngorm. Went down to the Ptarmigan Inn, had a nice meal and a beer, back up to Cairngorm, and then across the snowfield to Ben McDree.
Just tell us about the meal you had at the Ptarmigan Inn.
Macaroni and cheese and chips and tea and carrot cake and more tea and a big chocolate biscuit thing and a beer.
Fantastic. I was really, horrified really to learn that there was a cafe up there and I hadn't known about it, because if I'd known that that was there, then I would definitely have taken a different route. Anyway, to continue with Caban's route.
Yeah, it was about 4 or 5 miles across one big snowfield to McDooey, and it was lovely. It was a nice warm day, t-shirts, no wind, and it's lovely snow that you can just walk through. Crunch, 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 all the way.
And no sign of the big grey man then?
I didn't see any big grey men.
Okay. Okay. So after you got up to the top of Ben McDowie, what did you do then?
Stopped for a bit and then came down to Loch Etchikan and then went up to Derry Cairngorm over the boulder field, which is really hard work at the end of a hard day. And I was going to camp on Loch, well, beside Loch Etchikan. But Loch's all frozen over, snow fields mostly, and the bits that aren't snow were marsh, so I couldn't find anywhere. So I carried on down to Parth to the Hutchison Memorial Hut. And around that time, the thunder was rolling and the rain was starting to come in. So I went to the hut and struggled a bit. I thought it was locked, couldn't open the damn thing, but eventually got in, sat down, had a cup of tea. And then after about 15, 20 minutes, suddenly there's this banging on the door, somebody else trying to get in, and his face at the window. So I know that face. That looks like Pee Wiglet. So I did decide to let her in. I could have pretended it was locked.
Well, it's very kind of him to let me in. There would have been big trouble if he hadn't. So where were you then when the rain actually started, and for how long was it raining and hailing and stuff before you came down?
I didn't really get much of the heavy rain. It was just raining lightly as I came down, and it's only when I was in here having a nice cup of tea when this wet face appeared at the door and the rain was lashing down.
Yes, and it's all got much worse almost the moment that I came in, didn't it?
It was rolling in all the time, heavy, very heavy rain, very heavy hail. Coming and going. It's not been a very nice out.
So where did you start this year? Tell us about your route up to the Cairngorms.
Started Shore Bridge and did the Five Sisters and the Two Brothers. Big first day, absolutely exhausted. Mm. And then carried on the next day with some more Munros. Wasn't such a nice day then because there's new snow on the hilltops, about 3 inches. Mm. And I got lost in a whiteout and went the wrong way.
Well, that's an experience after my own heart. So, after Shield Bridge, where did you go after Shield Bridge?
So, yeah, along the tops, then down to Fort Augustus, and then over the Monoliths, via the dam, to the Findhorn Valley.
Right.
And then up and over the bogs again into Kincraig.
Okay.
And then Kincraig, up Fishy Bridge, over Brerick, and down to Larrigrew, then up to here.
And where are you planning to go from here?
I was planning on doing the next couple of Munros, but I think I've had enough now. I'm tired. I want some flat ground, so I'm going to take an alternative route, I think.
Okay. But you're not going to Braemar, are you?
Nope. Tempting as it is, it's nice to have a different route, because once you're in Braemar, you're kind of a bit limited as to where you go from there.
Yes.
So I'm kind of staying north of there and heading for a Boyne, using a whole stretch that I haven't been to before.
Right. And where are you planning to finish this year?
A little place called Muckles.
Right.
And I'll do my usual thing, camping on the cliff tops, I hope, if I can find a nice pitch.
Okay. So just tell me a little bit about the food that you're carrying with you in your pack, because you always have a nicer collection of food than anybody else, as far as I can tell. So what have you been living off this time round?
At the moment, I've still got half a loaf of bread and some organic mature cheese and some Lurpak butter and Branston pickle. I still have a round of white chocolate caramel slices. I've got Eccles cakes. I've got malt loaf. Mm. That's most of it.
Fantastic. Sounds delicious.
5 days of it, which is very heavy, unfortunately. But I'm working my way through it.
And what kind of fuel are you using?
I'm on your Meths burner.
And which stove?
It's the Mini Trangia, lightweight one.
Right.
It doesn't perform very well in wind.
Right.
But out of the wind, it's fine. Okay. It doesn't weigh much at all.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed for telling us about your challenge so far. For those who haven't been to the Hutchison Memorial Hut before, it's only a small room.
It's very cute.
Yes, it's cute.
Not enough room to swing a cat.
No, there's no fireplace, which is a pity, particularly because, as Caden pointed out to me earlier, there is actually a big stack of wood in the corner, so maybe that's just been put there to torture cold walkers. And there's a sort of bench along one side of it. It reminds me a bit of, for those who've done the Pennine Way, that thing, is it the 19 or 18 mile Bothy or something, where there's a sort of little benchy thing along each side of the room. Anyway, there's one bench, and we reckon it's probably too narrow to sleep on, so we think we're probably going to sleep on the floor. But I'm sure that after the sort of tiring days we've had, then that won't be any kind of a problem. And, tomorrow I am aiming straight for Braemar, so I've been looking at the map, and I think that means down to Derry Lodge, And then after that, the usual, I suppose, road walk, basically, via Mar Lodge to Braemar. And I'm so looking forward to getting that little cafe thing and having egg and chips is what I'm hoping for. Two soft eggs and a big pile of chips so that the yolk can run all over the chips. And I'll be having a large glass of milk with that. And then I'll be having a cup of tea. It'll be wonderful. And then I'll poke my nose into the Fife Farms and see who's around. And where are you going to be for lunch tomorrow, Caitlin?
Somewhere in the rain by the looks of it at the moment, but you never know. Might be in the sunshine by a stream, dipping my feet in the water and a cup of tea.
Well, let's hope so, because, I mean, to be fair, I suppose that with the exception of this afternoon, the weather's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's really taken a turn for the worse just this evening.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, OK, everybody, I think that's probably just about it for now. Can't think of anything else to say, so... I really hope that there's nobody... I mean, it's not actually raining just at the moment. And some... Well, actually, it depends where I look. Out of one window, it's pretty grey in the direction of Braemar. Looking out of the other window and back up towards Loch Etchachan or Etchachan or whatever it is, it's a bit misty, but not as cloggy as it was earlier on. So I really hope that there's nobody out there stuck. I suppose that there must be people at Kurrobothy at the moment. And so probably, you know, not really that far away from us. Enjoying convivial evenings, sort of chatting around and drying out their clothes. So it is goodbye from
Caitlin.
And it is goodbye from me. Goodbye.
It's looking pretty good. For the southern uplands and the southern and eastern highlands, a misty start with some patchy fog. This will soon clear and a fine hazy day in prospect with some hot sunny periods. For the Cairngorms, Deeside, Strathspey and into eastern Sutherland, there is a risk of a few showers this afternoon. For Mull, Skye and northwestern coastal ranges around Torridon, rather cloudier than elsewhere with some showery bursts of rain and coastal mist. Extensive hill fog will affect the Coolans and neighbouring coastal ranges. At Munro level, winds will be southwest 20 miles per hour to 30 miles per hour, but it'll be windier across the Coolans and the northwestern summits, with gusts of up to 40 miles an hour. Temperature at Munro level will be 14 Celsius.
The Braemar campsite this morning, as ever, a whole series of challenges are either getting ready to spend a rest day in Braemar or to move on. And I'm with now somebody I've known online for a while, but haven't yet met him in the flesh. John, how are you enjoying yourself?
It's been absolutely fantastic. I mean, before I went, the forecast was just, well, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't good. And the weather's just been fantastic. It's wall-to-wall sunshine for the last 3 or 4 days. I just can't believe my luck. It's just been brilliant, really has.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, I began to think at one point I was getting dehydrated, and I wouldn't be surprised if I was at all.
I think 2 days ago, I think I must have drank 6 or 7 litres of water during the day, and it was to the stage that I'm thinking that my route has to be near a stream. I'm not going to deviate from any kind of watercourse because it's been so lovely, it really has.
Now, you did what a lot of first-timers did. You shot out the blocks immediately, and you've been walking a few days ahead of most other people, and walking on your own most of the time.
Yeah, well, the plan was... I knew I was going to be slightly ahead of most, according to the route vetters. But if I'm doing long-distance walking and the weather's good, I've got a bit of a tendency to push on, just to get the miles under the belt. You know, because if it's horrible weather, you can just sit in your tent and do nothing. But because we've had such good weather, day after day, I've been pushing on, and... got to Braemar two days ago, so it's been lovely though, just to have a sit down for a couple of days in the sunshine and a few pints and meet everyone.
Now you're another of the increasingly lightweight, ultra lightweight brigade on the challenge. You've got a Duramid.
Well, yeah, I mean, I got that was a bit of a whim actually. I've always been into my tarps, and I got that for £80 second hand. I absolutely love it. So it's been a brilliant shelter, it really has.
Fantastic. There's so much space in there, isn't there?
Oh, it is. I mean, I was a bit worried about the... because the temperature's dropping and the midges, because it's the first time I've done this. So I made an inner big bivvy for it with a big bug net on. And again, I've not seen a single midge since I've started out. So it's been a bit overkill, but it's been... Oh, it is. They're cracking shelters. They really are.
And Innovate Boots and Go Light. Is that the Go Light jam?
Yeah, it's the original jam from about 4 or 5 years ago. The lighter one, again, it's just again, when I started getting back into backpacking after having a break with kids, looking at all the lightweight stuff, thought it was a bit of a gimmick. Tried that on, and it's different. It's not like a rucksack that sits on you. You wear it like, because there's no padding at all. It's completely cloth. You just wear it like an item of clothing. It's quite warm to wear, but it's rather awesomely comfortable. Really, really are.
Now obviously at Braemar, so the end is in sight now. But one last big day of adventure, I think.
Yeah, well, off to Jock's Road today, and it was looking at the maps and everything else. I'm off up there, 18 kilometres. It's a nice short day. Camping at the shelter just over the top. Should have absolutely cracking views down Glen Clover. And that's it. That's my last big, not biggie day, but it's my last hilly day, I think. And after that, it's going to be social camping from here on in, I think.
Okay. And are you hanging around at Montrose, or are you going straight back?
I finish on Wednesday, I think. I'm going to hang around on Montrose just to see who comes in. And I might go off around Scotland, see some friends as well, depending on when my train ticket is and everything else.
Well, we might catch up with you again in Montrose. Anyway, have a great day, John, and enjoy that camp, although it's going to be a bit high and exposed. Mind you, in this weather, I don't think you need to worry too much.
No, I think I should be all right. Cheers, Andy. Thanks a lot.
And the TGO Challenge is rightfully proud of the number of international visitors it gets, whose numbers seem to be increasing every year. And this year, I'm privileged to speak to Henry Shires, who not only is a walker from the United States, but one of the small band of specialist producers whose lightweight gear is revolutionising the way many of us walk. Henry, welcome to the Outdoor Station.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. It's a beautiful day this afternoon, I must say.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Now, you've been to Britain before, but not walked in Scotland.
No, not walked in Scotland. We were just, before we went on air just now, we were talking about how I walked across northern England on the coast-to-coast route a few years back. So, it's somewhat similar, but this is a more dramatic country, certainly, than that walk.
Yeah, and you started from Strathcowan, which is a nice start.
Yeah, it was very, very, very pleasant. The first few days out were a little cold and damp. It was a nice introduction to Scotland. And then it's turned, more California-like, really, more like where I'm from.
So. Yeah, you'll have to come back again because this is almost too good to be true. Braemar looks like a kind of Mediterranean hillside village at the moment. So what have been the highlight standouts for you as you walked across?
Well, probably my highlight day was yesterday when I walked over the summit of Ben, help me out here, Ben MacDooley. Yeah, that was a highlight walk. That's a nice alpine walk and a lot of snow and good views, and that was really a beautiful walk yesterday, I thought.
Okay, and not long to go now to the end. But it almost feels sometimes the TGO Challenge that 2 weeks you're just really getting into stride when it finishes. Scotland needs to be stretched a bit, I think.
Yeah, well, I where I come from in the US, we have some very long distance hikes. And I was privileged to walk from Mexico to Canada a few years back. And that was about a four and a half month walk. But I know what you're saying is you sort of get into that groove. And in a walk like this, 2 weeks, is you're just sort of getting to the point where you could just keep going and then it's going to end.
One of the things that's interesting talking to walkers from the States is that even very experienced ones are a little bit daunted by navigation over here. Have you found that a bit of a problem or an issue?
This is the first hike that I've ever used GPS. And I bought a little GPS unit and downloaded maps for Great Britain. And the GPS has been just fantastic. It's all the contours are in there, and I just look at my little device and I go. And
so you've followed that most of the way?
The whole way, yeah. I haven't even looked at a paper map, other than just to kind of get a sense of where I'm going to go the next day. But I never pull it out during the day.
And what do you do about recharging the batteries or replacing them?
Well, I've stayed at a few places along the way where I've been able to plug in a little wall adapter and charge batteries for the GPS I actually brought from home, but other devices I brought I've been able to recharge.
Okay, now, just talking about gear, because that's obviously one of the most interesting things of many people who listen to us. Just talk me through the non-tent bits of gear that you brought with you, and we'll come to the tents in a minute. Yeah, we'll come to the tents in a minute.
Sure. Okay. Well, obviously, I have a pack. It's made by a friend of mine, was made by a friend of mine named Brian Frankel, owns a company called ULA.
Yeah, I have one of his packs. Yeah, okay. Well, three of his packs, actually.
All right, yeah. So I'm taking one of his packs, and then I have a quilt that I made for myself some years back, a down quilt. I've got the standard array of shorts and shirts and shoes and pants. And I am wearing my standard running shoes, which have worked really well, I think, even in this terrain. They get constantly wet, but that's okay. They dry quickly.
Yeah, New Balance. My friend Phil Turner's been walking, has been wearing the same shoes, actually. Maybe not so quite well known here, but quite obviously popular and efficient at what they do.
Yeah, no, I'm a firm believer in running shoes for outdoor walking.
Just to digress a minute, I mean, you see quite a few ULA packs on them, mm-hmm. on the challenge. Brian's obviously now moved on and sold mm-hmm. out. I mean, who is he? What's he doing next? Do you know?
Well, I'm not really at liberty to divulge exactly what he's doing now, but he did sell his company. He's moved on. He's going to start a new chapter of his life. He'll pop up again. I'm not sure whether he's going to get back into the gear business or not.
Now, your top tents have been quite important for many lightweight hikers, not least here, because I think it somehow allow people to see that, yeah, you could go in climates like this without very firm, traditional, heavy, two-skinned tents. And so I think a couple of years ago, Colin Ibbotson, John Manning, people like that, started using tarp tents. So it feels particularly good to be talking to you about that. But how did the tarp tent business come about?
Well, that was a completely unintended accident or curse, depending on how you look at it. When I did the Mexico to Canada walk many years ago, I ended up making some of my own gear because I couldn't find anything light enough that I wanted to take. And one of those pieces of gear was a lightweight tarp with some mosquito netting. And I ended up writing up some plans and posting them on the internet how to make your own. And I kept getting emails from people wanting them to make one for them. And I didn't really want to spend my life in front of a sewing machine. So I have a friend of a friend who had a little sewing business, and I would shuffle them off, those requests off to that friend of a friend. And then a year or two after that, my wife ended up using that same tent I took on the Pacific Crest Trail and came home complaining it was too hard to set up. So I thought, well, just to jet you up, I'll make something a little easier to set up. And I thought it would take me a weekend. I spent months on the thing trying to get it perfected. Because in those days, I had no idea how to make tents, really, or anything particularly sophisticated. So at some point, I came up with an original a tent that I thought was much easier to set up and worked quite well. And that was the original tarp tent called the Virga. And then it was several years before it really turned into a full commercial business. But it gradually grew and grew. I had another job for a while, and then eventually it became full-time work. And, you know, here we are. We have full-time manufacturing in Seattle, Washington, where all the tents are made. And I spend, full-time plus on this business.
For those that have not yet seen these but are fascinated by it, I mean, they're kind of like very light single skin tents, quite often have a floor in them and integral bug netting, which is important in somewhere like Scotland with the insects and the midges. But the design's developed quite a lot, hasn't it, from a few years ago when I looked at them where you were using a couple of trekking poles to suspend mm-hmm. them at the front. So these days you've embraced the hoop or the curve.
Well, I've gone both directions. I continue to put out trekking pole tents. A new one just came out right before I left. But I'm not personally a trekking pole user. So for me, a tent with an integrated arch pole is my preference just because I don't use trekking poles.
Actually, you passed myself and a mate of mine a couple of days ago walking up a mountain, and we were sitting in a hut eating our lunch. Yeah. And we thought, there goes a professional. You were moving like mad, even without poles.
Well, I have one speed, and usually it's pretty fast, yeah.
So, no, anyway, we digress. But back to the hoop again. The tent you're carrying this year looks particularly ingenious, if I may say so. It's called The Moment because you can put it up in a moment, I guess.
Well, that was one of the play on words, yeah.
But it doesn't use much in the way of pegs.
No, it's a two-peg tent.
Do you know, let's say that again. It's a two-peg tent.
Two-peg tent, right. And each end is supported by two carbon fiber strut assemblies that are in a inverted V assembly. And then it's tensioned. Each end tensions the central arch.
Yeah, and the pegs, we should say, are quite substantial pegs.
They've worked well for those conditions.
Yeah, Colin Ibbotson has moved on from into all kinds of home design tarps, but he still uses your pegs.
Oh, okay. Oh, very good. Well, we don't make the tents, or the pegs. Easton does.
And this one has got just a small bit of bug netting at each end, so presumably the ventilation is good.
Well, actually, it's got full bug netting all the way around. It's when you're in and you're zipped up, there's full bug netting. But yeah, there are two end vents. And there's a storm flap at the end of that that's not... I rolled it back.
Yeah, good. So the company goes from strength to strength, and lots of new ideas, or it's going to keep evolving?
I think so. I mean, I spend more hours thinking about tents than anyone should. I will say that. Eventually something pops out.
There's a few people like that, like that around here. Well, you're obviously having a great time on the challenge, and as we said earlier, the weather here is absolutely fabulous.
It's been great. Yeah, it's been really a lot of fun.
Sit in the campsite in Braemar. It's marvellous. So I'll leave you to go and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Henry, and good luck with business for the forthcoming future.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
With me now is Louisa. We met first at Inverness coach station. I saw this couple looking very nervous with huge packs. I thought, I wonder if they're doing the challenge. And they came over, and yes, they were. But until relatively recently, you'd never heard of it, had
you? No, not at all. We'd met two ladies doing the Larry Grew. I was doing the Larry Grew. And we were at Linardy, and all these people were piling out of Glenfeshy.
This is last year.
Yes, last year. We were wondering what the hell is going on. And curiosity got the better of us, and we spoke to Michael's wife, Debbie, and some Leslie, perhaps, and they told us all about the challenge. So went back home and had a look and thought, yeah, we'll give it a bash.
And here you are. Now,
here I am.
There was a little bit of nerves in there when we met in Inverness, absolutely. But you've obviously had a cracking time.
The people have been incredible, and I know in Fort Augustus, I was really worried that I wouldn't meet Braemar. I really, really was scared because the feet had gone, but the support has been amazing.
People just encourage you on and...
all the time. Perfect strangers just coming up. You can't give up. You've got to keep going. That's
yeah, there's a camaraderie spirit that's fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah. Everyone's been really, really great. And sort of like tips too. You know, like the micropore thing and putting them on hot spots and that on your feet. Never heard of that before. We just automatically going on the compedes and... you know, but no, everybody's been really, really good.
Oh, that's so brilliant. That's brilliant. Now, come on, I mean, walking across Scotland like this, there must be highs and there must be lows. So, come on, what are the highs so far?
The pubs. Coming across the town.
It doesn't take you long to discover the full, the real spirit of the challenge.
I know. No, it has been good walking into a town and having that first pint. And the lows is on your ascents, thinking you're at the top, and you never are. And you turn another corner, and there's more to come.
Yeah, there's always another little hidden ridge, isn't there, or something?
That's the hard bit, yeah.
And you went over the Coyarrick Pass.
Oh, yes. Never again. Never, ever.
You're surprised how many people say that.
Never again. It wasn't too bad. Fort Augustus was kind of like a crazy day for us, because when we set out to leave, I went to the doctor's surgery first to be padded up. So we had a late start.
It is a good tip, that, isn't it? That people having trouble with your feet and blisters or whatever, and most of the little towns here have got little microsurgeries or units. That's go right. Into them and they'll look after you.
They really do. And the nurse, I thought perhaps she would just sell me some dressings, but she said, no, you've got to be seen. So we held back. It was about 10 o'clock we left, but she was brilliant. She was really nice, and she said, I've seen them all coming hobbling in here. So she was really cool. And then when we left for surgery, we met a local historian, I think. He used to be part of the estate there. And he gave us a history lesson all the way to our path.
There you go.
So we would sort of like delayed another hour because we were talking to him. But these were things that we wouldn't have found out if we hadn't spoken to a local guy, which was just great.
Yeah.
So by the time we hit the Blackburn Bothy, it was about 2 o'clock.
Yeah, that's a little late for most people.
Yeah, but no, it was good. So it was a long day, though. I wouldn't want to do that again. If I do the challenge again, we're definitely avoiding the pass.
I think one of the things about the challenge for the first time is you do tend to take a lower route, and you do tend to take a route with more road in it. And yeah. It's part of the... because you're not quite sure what to expect, are you?
Well, I must admit, before actually starting the challenge, I couldn't understand what the problem of road walking was. And I'd read on the message board that, oh, no, avoid the roads, avoid the roads. And now I totally appreciate why people don't like road walking.
Now, that brings me to your feet, because it's amazing how people learn quickly on the challenge. There's a nice new pair of Innovate shoes there.
That's right.
Are you going to be walking in those?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Like I say, I started out on the brashes on day one. Feet went. Carried on for a couple of days, padded up, but I was on codeine every 3-4 hours. And then I wore Mel's Keen sandals for 30-odd miles. And he said, well, when we get to Braemar, try and see if you can get something. And then when I noticed all you guys wearing these Innovet things, I thought, yeah, I'm going to go and get a pair of them.
There's just this psychological thing about getting your feet wet, but they get dry again, and it's good, honestly.
The guy in the shop gave me super feet, too, to put in them, and what a difference.
And, you know, on hot weather like this, you find yourself walking through water just to keep your feet cool.
Yeah, I can totally appreciate that.
Absolutely superb.
I know, it's been good fun.
So, have you discovered yet this is an addictive kind of a thing?
We have discussed our starting point next year.
yes. And so far, where are you looking at?
Malaga Oban.
Both are beautiful places.
Yeah, Malaga Oban. So, but yes, it has come up in conversation.
The only thing about Malaga is you're going to go over a lot of the territory probably that you did this year.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Yeah, I'd like to hit down Winnie and go sort of like just a little, just don't know, just get the maps out again and reroute.
That's it. Most people by this point are now beginning to think about where they're going to go next year.
It's funny, isn't it? Everybody's talking about it, too. It's really exciting.
Look, I'm going to leave you to enjoy yourself. Are you going to the Bingo Wings concert this afternoon?
Yes, we are. Yep, heading up for some stuff.
Braemar's greatest rock and roll band, Braemar's only rock and roll band.
Apparently so.
A night not to be missed. I'll see you later.
Thanks, Andy.
In the Fife Arms, you meet all of these interesting people you never met before. And I've got Mike Firkins with me, who is from?
Adelaide, Australia.
And is this the first challenge?
This is my first challenge, it is, yep.
Okay, and how are you enjoying it?
It's been great. It's fantastic, actually, yeah.
Now, how on earth did you come to want to do this? Is this something, and how did it first come to your attention?
Well, I was buying a tent, and I was looking at a tarp tent, scarp one, and I was looking at reviews on the web, and everywhere I was reading it said, but will you use it on the challenge? And I ignored the first couple of those, and then I decided, well, I've just got to find out what this challenge thing is, and sucked in, here I am.
There you go. Where did you start from?
Strathcarron.
Yeah, the Strathcarron is a great start.
It's a lovely little pub and it's a nice spot, yeah.
So tell me, how on earth do you go about planning a route when you're sitting in Adelaide?
Well, I bought a whole heap of paper maps and had a good look at the maps and I did a bit of cheating on the web, saw where people had been, and then I planned it out using Where's the Path, a website that compares the Ordnance Survey maps with Google satellite images. And then I use Grau Route to do the final planning, and I've got a sat map, and I put the stuff on the sat map. Yeah, it's worked out really well.
So, I mean, often we joke here that the planning of the challenge is far harder than actually walking it, but it sounds quite an elaborate procedure. That it must have taken quite a long time.
Yeah, I was exhausted by the time I got to Braemar and the planning. So, it's very hard not knowing the country. So.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I started doing it was I realised I hadn't done enough walking in Scotland, and I thought, well, if I do this, I walk through 5 or 6 distinct regions and get a feel for it. So, but you've got a whole new country to come to terms with. So how did you pick your kit?
Well, I sort of basically went on people's advice, largely on the message board. So if I had... normally in Australia I'd use, I'd use layering. But there's so much positive stuff. I bought some Paramo, and that's been really great, but a bit hot.
it's not, to be fair, it's not usually as hot as this.
No. And training in Adelaide, I was doing training, and I was hoping for it to cool down, and of course it's this temperature. So it's been interesting. I'm sure it would be a lot harder for me if it was really cold, but it hasn't been, so it's been good.
Packs, shelters?
I'm using the scarp that I was researching at the start. Pack, I'm using a Gossamer Gear, what do they call that? Mariposa Plus. It's been great. Yeah.
Henry Shires, of course, who makes the scarf, is on the challenge. Have you bumped into him yet?
Yeah, several times. Actually, he's next to me in the campground. Yeah.
Is he? Ah, go and try and see if I can collar him later.
Yeah, he's got his latest design, which is the Moment, and it uses two pegs and a pole, and you can pitch it in under a minute. It's amazing.
Now, working all that way, because I reckon by the time you get to Braemar, it's kind of on the way home now, but what are the outstanding moments of the experience for you so far?
First day, I think the first day was great because it confirmed to me that the walking I've done in Tasmania and around the place was actually appropriate for the type of country I was in. It was great to see heather, and I've done a lot of heather stomping, so, yeah, I think...
You need to have done a bit of heather stomping.
No, it was great. And also passing over bog and stuff, and it not being boggy was a great thing for me, because that's, you know, demoralising, really. Yeah.
So
it's a bit of a cheat, really.
Okay, and where are you going from Braemar?
From Braemar, I'm going up Loch Nagar, staying at Glass Out Shiel. Then I've got a night at the B&B House of Mark.
Oh, no. People stay at the House of... Shirley, sorry, you've stayed at House of Mark, haven't you?
I have stayed at House of Mark. Well, in the past, it was, I think, it's in different hands now. It was owned by B. Rawlinson. It's
supposed to be a yes.
Oh, sorry, yes, okay.
But I remember you just saying the food was stunning.
Food was absolutely fantastic when it was owned by B. Rawlinson. And it may still be, but she was a real, real fantastic cook. I mean, it was amazing. It was worth crossing Scotland just to go to the House of Mark.
A culinary experience. You've got that look to forward to?
Yeah, it should be good, yeah. And then from there, I go down to Tarfside, up to Mount Baddock and Charbrothy and Federoso Forest to Stonehaven, or actually to Donatar Castle.
And Montrose on Thursday, presumably.
Yeah.
We'll see you then. We'll look for you in the campsite. Mike, it's great to see you. And people explained to you how addictive this event is.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, I'm waiting for that to kick in. We'll see. It's pretty expensive to come from Australia, though.
Well, we're glad you made the trip, and have a good time for the rest of it.
Yep, thanks.
And come back again and bring this weather with you.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Also with me here is Paul, who I met earlier on, and is trekking around with a group of friends. And when I first met him, I think this might have been on day two or day three of the challenge, he had some rather unique footwear.
Yeah, my North Face hedgehogs kind of give way on the bus coming to Dorney. By the time I made it to Coogee Lodge, we had definite problems. Looking at them now, we're down to half a shoe and 10 metres of gaffer tape.
What are the fetching gaffer tape around the toes?
Yes, you've probably seen quite a few of my shoe-like gaffer tape imprints left. 10 metres gone so far through a gaffer tape. We're going to have to buy some new boots, and that's why I came up to talk to you earlier on.
But you're still smiling, though, so you must have had a good time.
Yes, it's been brilliant. All four of us had a really good time. Halfway point now, so it's homeward bound. And I've had some good news today. My friends just had a baby, so great news there.
What are the standout moments for you so far?
I think it was the wild camp at Glen Fesci. We found an old campsite remains. We got a bit of a fire going, and it was really good.
It's a very magical spot, I would think, Glen Fesci.
It is. I'd never actually heard of it before, but as we were approaching it, everyone kept mentioning Glen Fesci, so I was looking forward to it. And it certainly didn't let me down. Some great views, plenty of pictures took. So.
And this blend of kind of adventure and then socialising that we're experiencing now is quite unique, isn't it?
Yeah, I must admit, I came for the socialising, basically.
There are some people who think this is a kind of 250-mile pub crawl, and I think for some of them it probably is.
Yeah, well, I can definitely confirm that is right. It's the first drink I've had since Newton Moore, actually, but looking forward to the party tonight.
Well, perhaps we'll catch up with you later or meet up again at Montrose, and hopefully then you'll have got a new pair of shoes.
Yeah, you should do, yeah. Okay.
Cheers, Paul. We'll be right back.
Braemar deserves a big thanks for their warm welcome and free party night they've started in recent years for the challengers. However, from here, even though there are still a few mountains yet to climb, there is a downhill feeling as walkers keep one wistful eye on the receding highlands and one on the approaching coast. To prolong some of the pleasures, there are those who head straight for Callita Lodge. Others just want to head back into the hills to cherish the last few days before they get sand between their toes and the challenge is over for another year. A more detailed account of their crossing with pictures and kit lists, etc. can be found on their blogs. Andy's is andyhowell.info. Shirley's is pwiglet.com. Plus, of course, the website dedicated to the event itself, tgochallenge.co.uk.
Join us next time as the journey across Scotland continues on the TGO Challenge. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear more from our extensive free library, please visit the website at theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
You can now follow The Outdoor Station on Facebook, where we chat about each programme we produce, answer questions and discuss future productions. Why not join us there?
This podcast is produced and hosted by theoutdoorstation.co.uk.